You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The day before the G8 and G20 summits began, over 2,000 people rallied in the streets of Toronto as part of an Indigenous Day of Action. That action was organized by a grassroots Aboriginal community network called Defenders of the Land. Red Eye member Peter Driftmeyer spoke last week with Clayton Thomas Mueller. Clayton is a coordinator of Defenders of the Land. Peter reached him on his drive to Toronto for the G8 protests and, following that, to Detroit for the U.S. Social Forum. Peter began by asking him how Defenders of the Land got started.
At the first gathering, the network Defenders brought together about 55 grassroots leaders and supporters from across Canada into the historic Friendship Center in the north end of Winnipeg to talk about what steps need to be taken to reinvigorate the Indigenous rights struggle in Canada, and what steps need to be taken to define, you know, our political and economic, social, and spiritual agenda for the current threats that we face, you know, not just to our people, our way of life, but, you know, to the land that has sustained us through time immemorial.
And what was Aboriginal community organizing looking like then that you decided to do this?
Well, I think that, you know, one of the sad state of affairs of the current political institutions representing Aboriginal interests, at least nationally, is that they've become significantly co-opted by the government agenda. And, of course, this has been an issue ever since the constitutional recognition of the five national Aboriginal organizations, with, of course, the Assembly of First Nations, representing First Nations, the Métis National Council, the Inuit Tapuris Katanami, the National Association of Friendship Centers, National Native Women's Association, and the Congress of Aboriginal Peoples. A lot of these organizations, ever since that recognition and ever since the introduction of federal funding streams, there's been a tremendous amount of infighting, of fracturedness, of a loss of focus, if you will, that did not exist prior to those organizations becoming constitutionally recognized as the official voice for Aboriginal people in the nation's capital. Prior to that, you know, it was the Friendship Center movement. You know, it was Inuit, Métis, First Nations, non-status, everybody working together, knowing that there was a historical wrong done and mobilizing to support our people who were, you know, very quickly becoming urbanized. And here we are today where, you know, most of our political institutions are heavily dependent, almost, I would say, 100% dependent on federal funding. And as such, have been steered away from the critical, pieces or issues, rather, that, you know, they were designed in the first place to advocate on our behalf. And I'm talking, of course, about, you know, the federal land claim process, you know, the ongoing work to honor the treaties and to have the treaties implemented, the ongoing work to, you know, have our Aboriginal title and our God-given Aboriginal rights recognized. You know, the list goes on and on. The fact of the matter is that for the majority of communities that, you know, are part of Defenders of the Land Network, these institutions have done absolutely nothing in most cases to support them in the hardcore frontline struggles that they're currently engaged in with provincial government entities and, of course, the corporations that are manipulating the government, the provincial and federal government, to gain access to our sacred lands. For unsustainable development, whether that's coming in the form of forestry, mining, or, of course, energy development. And so Defenders of the Land have come together. We've had some highly successful initiatives, and we're continuing to mobilize through into the GHG 20 and sent the call out on June 24th, national call to action, essentially, to call out Canada while all eyes of the world are on Canada, about their gross human rights violations of, you know, Aboriginal people in this country, and to highlight, you know, some of the key issues that this this government has responded to flimsily or not at all. And of course, those issues that I'm talking about are, you know, of course, the issue of the murdered and missing Aboriginal women in this country, where the list continues to grow. And of course, you know, issues surrounding the lack of recognition of our treaty or our inherent Aboriginal rights, and many other issues as well.
Before we get more into the G8 and G20 action, are there any particular legal or political structures that the defenders want changed?
Well, yes, of course. I mean, you know, I think what we're trying to do is to bring the movement back into political organizing, you know, the social movement aspect of organizing. You know, I think one thing that we know is that we are more stronger in numbers, and the, you know, in many cases, it's the same companies, same corporations, same corporate interests, same government agenda that's, you know, causing so much strife in so many of our frontline communities. And so Defenders of the Land, you know, has brought these communities together to talk about, you know, what kind of systemic change we need, whether it's at the very top, you know, in terms of, you know, the issues surrounding Section 35 of the Canadian Constitution, issues around the Indian Act, and of course, issues faced, you know, by a very watered-down, you know, political voice in capital city. And so what do we want to see changed? Well, I think we want to see our institutions go back to advocating for what they're supposed to be advocating for in terms of the implementation of treaties, you know, the dissolving of the Indian Act, of course, that being done in a timeline set by First Nations, not by government agendas or government timelines, you know, with proper, adequate resources provided, you know, to communities, you know, to continue to develop, you know, local governance systems in accordance with the local customs and traditions. You know, there's a number of different issues. I mean, the list goes on and on. But I do think that one very immediate change that we want to see is the isolation of our frontline people. You know, the people that are fighting against the logging companies that are threatening the territories of the mining companies or the tar sands in northern Alberta. You know, bottom line, there's always been a conquer and divide tactic that's been imposed on Indigenous peoples in this country. And one of the things Defenders of the Land aims to do is to bring our people together, you know, and to let them know that they're not isolated, they're not alone, that these issues that we're facing in our communities are systemic, that they are right across the country. And, you know, it's going to take us coming together and then, you know, also reaching out to other social movements, including labor, student movements, and others to, you know, effect the change that is necessary here in this country that they call Canada.
And when you say that they're isolated, do you mean that individual nations are isolated from other nations' struggles, or do you mean people organizing in those nations are isolated from their own community?
Well, when I use the term isolated, I think I mean it on all levels, both macro and micro. You know, whether it's the geographic location of many of our northern communities, which of course are being targeted by diamond mining corporations or hard rock mining companies or massive hydroelectric dams or, you know, energy expansion, whether it's the tar sands or natural gas or whatever, you know, geographically our communities are isolated. But also the tactics that companies utilize, you know, are all about isolation. They're about, you know, trying to find the top of the pyramid, you know, trying to find who's the leadership to acquire, you know, consent, I guess you would say. You know, who do they consult to get the yes so that they can go forward with development in First Nations lands? You know, and of course, you know, one of the things that Defenders of the Land aims to do is to, as I said, help our people not to get isolated either by tactics of companies or governments trying to gain access to the resources in our traditional lands, but also, you know, to let folks, whether they're up north or in southern Canada with road access, that they're not alone, and that, you know, there are other First Nations standing in solidarity with them in their local struggle, and in many cases facing the same exact situation.
Now, with the action on June 24th, there will be many protesters there who aren't necessarily First Nations, and it's built into this larger set of protests against the G8 and G20. Why is Defenders targeting the G20 for this?
Well, I think that the G20 represents, you know, is a very important target for Defenders of the Land. You know, Prime Minister Harper likes to travel about the world in his pompous sort of way, you know, and talk about how Canada is an emerging energy superpower. And, you know, one thing the listeners should understand is that Russia is an energy superpower. You know, the United States is a military superpower. And what Canada is a resource colony to a military superpower. And that, of course, is our largest trading partner, the United States of America. Now, that said, Canada also, you know, 86% of the world's mining companies are publicly traded on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Canada has the second largest oil deposit, although be it unconventional and extremely carbon and energy and water intensive. You know, the tar sands are the second largest oil deposit on the planet, second only to Saudi Arabia. And Canada's boreal forest, of course, is the second largest, you know, most critical carbon sink on the planet next to the Amazon rainforest. And so Canada is rich in resources. However, we are not an energy superpower. What we've become, like I said, is an energy colony to a military superpower. And, you know, Canada is using the G20 to, you know, basically say, hey, we're open for business. We've got the world's lowest leasing rates. We've got the world's lowest royalty regime. You know, we have no nationalized state petroleum firm. We have no nationalized state mining companies or any of that sort of business. So the private sector, come on down. And, you know, the reality of it is that this, the agenda that is being laid out in terms of, you know, neoliberal kind of free market economics, you know, being pushed forward by the G20, by the Canadian Harper minority government, in partnership with other powerful governments of the world, will have a extremely disproportionate impact on Indigenous peoples in this country, because it's not this so-called ruling class that lives up north where all the resources are. It's Indigenous peoples, it's Inuit people, it's Métis communities, it's First Nations communities. And, you know, the reality of it is that if we don't stand up and highlight the gross human rights record of this country on its Aboriginal population, or the fact that Canada is one of only two countries left on the planet to ratify the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, or the fact that Canada was the number one Darth Vader at the international climate negotiations, stalling any kind of meaningful legally binding climate agreement coming out of Copenhagen, or the fact that at every single international gathering, international UN instrument, whether it's the Commission on Biological Diversity or the Commission on Sustainable Development, Canada is doing everything in its power to suppress any reference to Indigenous rights, specifically collective rights. And locally or domestically, Canada is doing everything it can to you know, basically strategize to extinguish Aboriginal title and Aboriginal rights in this country. You know, not only our people, but most disproportionately, the aunties and mothers and grandmothers and young women of our beautiful First Nations are being affected, you know, by the violence that this type of economic paradigm perpetuates. And, you know, action must be taken, and Defenders of the Land, in solidarity with the thousands of activists that are converging on the G20, you know, intend to do so.
You mentioned the UN Declaration or Treaty on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. If Canada were to sign that, how would that change the local dynamic, and how would that change the Indigenous rights landscape?
Well, the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is in no way a reflection of you know, how far nation states need to go in terms of recognizing the distinct political and legal identity of indigenous peoples and our title to our traditional lands. It in no way, is the final step in reconciliation, in colonial countries like Canada, between, nation states like Canada and its local indigenous population. What it provides is a bare minimum standard in terms of international standards on indigenous rights for nation states to use as a baseline in developing a new paradigm or a new relationship with indigenous populations. And so the 29 or so articles in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, refer to a variety of areas, everything from the right to food security, the right to development, the right to free, prior, and informed consent. The list goes on and on. And what it does essentially is it's the bare minimum standards. And Canada at this point is absolutely nowhere near even that bare minimum standard baseline laid out by the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And this is absolutely one of the key issues that we will be highlighting during the G20 mobilization in Toronto.
That was Clayton Thomas Mueller speaking with Red Eye member Peter Driftmeyer. And Clayton was literally on the road to Toronto for the G8, G20 protests and then to Detroit for the U.S. Social Forum. Clayton coordinates the Defenders of the Land. If you would like more information on the Defenders, you can visit defendersoftheland.org.